Hare Krishna. Is this on? Yes? Hari Sari Prabhu and myself, we've been together at temples a few times. We've only gotten to speak together on one other occasion.
Alachua.
I was in Alachua. And was it?
10 years ago.
Yeah, about 10 years ago. 1996 or 7 or 5. 94. 94?
Yeah.
1994 on Vyas Puja Day?
Yeah. I mean, it might have been 95.
Anyway, just about 10 years ago. Although we were in, just last week we were in Govardhan together in Vrindavan, but somehow or other we missed it. And even in the Ukraine, we were at the festival in the Ukraine, and we spoke alternately there at the festival. And we decided not to speak together because it's very difficult with translation to get any kind of a flow going. And speaking about Srila Prabhupada, I know for myself, I very much like there to be a nice flow. Some of you were probably in Ravel. How many devotees were in Ravel when I... A handful of devotees. When Radhanath Maharaj invited me there that day, it was the first day of the parikrama. And he's always eager to tell everyone that I spoke for 5 hours straight. So the amazing thing was, after I spoke for 5 hours, he did kirtan for 1 hour and then spoke for 3 more hours. For me, it was amazing. For him and for all of you, it was another day in Krishna consciousness. But anyway, that was a very wonderful day for me. I enjoyed it so much. So I guess, well, Hari Sari is allowing me to start out first because I was Prabhupada's servant before he was. So.
Is this on? He is my Sampradaya Acharya. Everything that I learned, it was on Prabhupada's party, it was already established because of Shruti Prabhu's service that was done years before.
So, since it is Kartik, we're in the month of Kartik here, and that was, I thought I would start out there, because I became Srila Prabhupada's servant in just after Janmashtami of 1972 in New Vrindavan. When Prabhupada left New Vrindavan, I left with him in 1972, so it was right around the beginning of September. And Kartik that year, 1972, started right on October 15th. And of course went on for 1 month. And I was just a new devotee at the time. I had been a devotee for 16 months when I became Srila Prabhupada's servant. And I was 20 years old. And, I didn't know much. I didn't grow up in India, you know, with some remnants of Vedic culture. I grew up in America. And I didn't know much about anything, even at the time. I was chanting my 16 rounds and would read a little bit from the 4 books that were there in ISKCON. But from the time Prabhupada went to Pittsburgh, over the next 6 weeks, he would talk to me about going to Vrindavan, because Prabhupada was returning to Vrindavan. He had been there a few times over the next few years, in the late 60s and early 70s. Plenty of room.
We're just going to invite Yadabara Prabhu to join us as well, because he had a lot of pastimes with Srila Prabhupada, especially here in India. So, Yadabara Prabhu ki!
So I can remember Prabhupada was so eager to go back to Vrindavan which was his home, at Radha Damodar Temple. At that time, there was no Krishna Balaram Mandir. The land was just being purchased, and Prabhupada was returning to his rooms, which Guru Das and Jamuna had cleaned up and prepared for him. And he was telling me, I remember on one flight, as we were getting closer and closer, he was saying, so, he said, when we get to Vrindavan, he said, again, it'll be Kartik, and he said, we'll stay there for 1 month, which was also an amazing thing that Prabhupada was able to stay in that one place for 1 month, because at the time, just down the street from here, there's a Juhu project, was taking a lot of Prabhupada's time, so much of his time, and they were always needing him to be there and needing to speak to him about it to try to get that property together. So despite that, Juhu was there in the background and so much difficulty was there, Prabhupada was determined to stay in Vrindavan at Radha Damodar Temple for the 1 month. And he said, and I'll speak from Nectar of Devotion every day. He said, I'll speak to my Western disciples. He said, my American, at that time, basically it was American and European disciples. And he said, and all the classes will be in English. And none of these things were very significant to me at the time. And looking back, it was so significant what Prabhupada was doing as he was returning to this place, Vrindavan, that he had left. Now it was 7 years before. And when he left, you know, most everyone, they thought he would be returning to Vrindavan, but they didn't think he would be returning with any disciples. They thought he was going to return because nothing would happen in the West, just like others had tried previously and some of his godbrothers going to the West. But no one expected that this man of 70 years old, this Swami, would be able to do what he was setting out to do. So now, he had established Krishna consciousness already. It was all over the world. There were temples started in America and Europe and a few other places. And he said, I'll have my Western disciples there. There were about 60. Were you there at that time?
No, I wasn't there. Vishakha was there.
Vishakha was there. And there was about 60 or so devotees there. And Prabhupada wanted them to sit there and he would speak to them, you know, from Nectar of Devotion. And he said, and you can read, he said to me, from Nectar of Devotion. And he said, and sometimes I will stop you and give commentary. And if you see from the Nectar of Devotion classes, of course, Prajumna, he did the reading. And then Prabhupada would speak. So we gave morning class, Srimad Bhagavatam, and in the evening, right there in the courtyard, where Srila Rupa Goswami's Samadhi and Bhajan Kutir are, which Prabhupada would look at that. You know, when he was in Radha Damodar translating Srimad Bhagavatam, he would describe how he would sit there and he would look out his kitchen window. Right now they're redoing the whole kitchen area. And he would look at the Samadhi and his Bhajan Kutir, he said, and there he would get his encouragement. And he described that place, Radha Damodar. He said it's the very center of the spiritual world. He said it was the hub of the wheel. He said Radha Damodar Temple was the hub of the wheel of the spiritual world, because this is where this Krishna consciousness movement started with Srila Rupa Goswami and as his inspiration. And Prabhupada went and left this Radha Damodar. This morning in class, someone I heard from my room, one of the questions about ISKCON, this International Society for Krishna Consciousness, and how Prabhupada used the word Krishna. And Prabhupada described that he, at that time also, he was one of the people in New York, they were saying, why call it Krishna? You know, if you say God consciousness, you can attract so many more people, huh? Just say God. And Prabhupada said, that is not why he went to the West. He didn't go there to establish God consciousness. He went to establish that Krishna is God. Krishna is the supreme personality of Godhead. He said, so whether people come or did not come, it didn't matter. It had to be Krishna consciousness. This was very important to him. So now he had done that, and he was bringing, he had these Westerners living in Vrindavan, in India, from the West. They were white-skinned people with sikas, shaved head, tilak. And he was very proud of them. He was very proud of his Western Vaishnavas. And he didn't consider that they were inferior, that they were, because they were from the West, they weren't from India. And this very much you can see as he spoke, he would establish this consciousness that these are Vaishnavas by qualification. They've given up all bad habits. They're following regulative principles. They're chanting 16 rounds. And they've done this from a place that, he was saying, in India, you couldn't even understand. They had everything, but they were not satisfied. They would only be satisfied with Krishna. So he was a success. So that's what I saw in 1972 when Prabhupada went back to Vrindavan. He had accomplished what he had set out to do, and he was letting everyone observe his Western disciples. Everyone was invited, but he spoke in English. So it was such a nice, sweet thing, Prabhupada going back there. And he did stay there the whole month, even though he was getting letters, go to Bombay, you know, go to Juhu. He remained there, and that's such a wonderful time. Well, we can start there.
Well, yeah, I think Radha Damodar is a good starting point. Because I joined Prabhupada's party in late 1975. I actually didn't come to India until Gaur Purnima of 75. That was the last time Shridakirti Prabhu was in Mayapur, was in 1975 up until this year. After 30 years, we managed to get him back there. But his last time there was my first time there. So I was coming later in the picture. By that time, of course, in Vrindavan, then in 1975, then Krishna Balaram Mandir was opened. And that was on Ram Navami. So we had the Mayapur festival. Then we went down to Hyderabad for about a week there. And then maybe there was about 150, 200 devotees that went down on the train. And then we came back up to Mathura. And then we participated in the opening of the Krishna Balaram Mandir. Later on, I moved to the Krishna Balaram temple in July of 75. I was previously living in Australia. And then Prabhupada came for 3 weeks for Janmashtami and Radhashtami. And, of course, he was very intent on getting his Krishna Balaram Mandir up and running nicely. He was very concerned that he'd spent so much money there, and he wanted the standards to be very, very high. So he spent 3 weeks there. Then he went off. That time I was the temple commander in Vrindavan. And then Prabhupada came back again in November. And that was when I had the good fortune to join his personal party. So in December he came to Vrindavan for about 12 days. But again he was just at Krishna Balaram Mandir. And he didn't go anywhere else. And then about a year later, we actually spent 3 months, September, October, and November, in Vrindavan. So during that period, we had one visit that Prabhupada made to the Radha Damodar Mandir. And it was very nice to see Prabhupada there in his old place. And he had told us a few stories about how he came to be in the Radha Damodar, that originally, of course, he had retired from his family life officially in 1954, and he had moved to Jhansi, and he was there for about 2 years, and he had this League of Devotees that he was trying to get started, and under the auspices of the League of Devotees, then he had this building, and he was trying to create some kind of a spiritual movement. He actually initiated his first disciple at that time, when he was in Jhansi. His name was Prabhakar Acharya, and Prabhupada gave him the name Haridas. But then he said, after that he didn't initiate anybody else, because they weren't serious. There was a group of students. They were all medical students. So they were coming and helping and hearing from him, but Prabhupada said they weren't really serious. So he only initiated that one man. Then after some time, because of some problems, then he had to move from Jhansi. So he went to stay at his godbrother, Keshava Maharaj's mutt. That was in 1956, a few months there in Mathura. Then from there he spent a few months in Imlital. Then the godbrother that owned the Imlital temple, he also had a place in Delhi. So Prabhupada went and stayed there in the Delhi place. And during that period, then he got into some serious writing. He was working on his Back to Godhead magazine. And, of course, the first Back to Godhead came out in 1944. It was published on the appearance day of his Guru Maharaj, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. And actually in 1976, when we were visiting Washington, D.C., Yadabara was there. Some of the devotees had gone to the Library of Congress. So the Library of Congress, they have millions of books and publications from all around the world. So the devotees were looking for a copy of the Surya Siddhanta because they were doing some research for the Mayapur Planetarium. And whilst they were there, Pradyumna Prabhu actually found an original copy of the very first Back to Godhead. It was there in the Library of Congress. So he photocopied the whole thing and he brought that to show Srila Prabhupada. Prabhupada was very happy to see it. And he told us that he had printed that first Back to Godhead on the best paper with the best printer in Calcutta, Saraswati Press. And he had gotten the biggest distributor in Bengal to do the distribution of it. So then he thought that perhaps that person had sent it to the Library of Congress. But anyway, it's very interesting that it was lying there. So Prabhupada, he got two issues of Back to Godhead out in 1944. Then he wasn't able to do anything more until about 1952. Then he got another couple of issues out. Then again in 1956, he got some more issues out, and that was when he had retired. So producing Back to Godhead became his main occupation in his retirement. And when we were there in Vrindavan in September of 76, we were discussing something was going on, some managerial problem was there. Prabhupada was suffering from high blood pressure. So at one point he started rubbing his head. He said, "All right," he said, "finish, that's enough. Now I have brain fag." So I was kind of bemused. I didn't know what brain fag was. So I said, "Brain fag, Srila Prabhupada?" He said, "Yes, brain fag." And then he explained. He said, "One time, when I was living in Delhi, I was selling my Back to Godhead." So he said, "I was going from one place to another. It was very hot." So he said, "I was out in the sun, and I got brain fag." So he said, "I was reeling like a drunkard. Brain wasn't working anymore from heat exhaustion." So he was out trying to sell his Back to Godhead magazine. Then he said, just at that moment, a friend of his happened to go past in a motor car and saw him staggering on the road. So he immediately stopped. He said, Prabhupada told me, he said, it was Krishna's arrangement that this man happened to go past just at that moment. And he took him in his car and took him home and gave him some medicines. Then after some time, then he was okay. So that was his explanation of brain fag. The brain stops working and, you know, it doesn't function properly. So that was Prabhupada's activity in Delhi in the mid-50s. And he was coming back and forth between Delhi and Vrindavan. So later on he got this place, a room on the roof of the Bamsi Gopal Temple. Bamsi Gopal Temple is a small temple just behind Kesigat Mandir, the palace there. And so Prabhupada lived there for several years. And he was coming and going and doing his Back to Godhead, I think in 1958. Again, he got some more issues of that out. And he had a friend who was a librarian. So this friend told him, he appreciated the Back to Godhead, and he told him that, actually, why don't you write books? Because this newspaper, once it's read, then people will simply throw it away. But if you write a book, then they'll read it and they'll keep it. So Prabhupada took that as good advice, and I think one of his godbrothers also mentioned to him that you should write a book. So he, in 1958 then, he wrote his first book, which was Easy Journey to Other Planets. Small book, but that was his first attempt at book writing. Then, not long after that, of course he took sannyas in 1959, and the proprietor at the Radhadamodar Mandir, Gorchan Gosai, he knew Srila Prabhupada, so he invited him. He said, I have these two rooms. They're a little broken down, so you can fix them up, and you can live in them, and you give whatever you like. So I was discussing this with Srila Prabhupada, actually, in 1976. We were in London. This was on the 26th of July. And the devotees had come from France, and they had brought a copy of the first French Srimad Bhagavatam. So we were looking through that, and they had printed a picture of Srila Prabhupada's kitchen in the Radhadamodar Mandir. So it shows, you can see the table and then the window that he used to sit and look out of, which would look out onto Srila Rupa Goswami's Samadhi. So that nice picture was there. I think it was the first time that it had been published in any of Prabhupada's books. So we were sitting and talking, and then I mentioned it to Srila Prabhupada that, oh, they put this picture of your Radhadamodar kitchen in this book. So Prabhupada was very interested. He said, oh, let me see. And then he started to reminisce a little bit about how he was living in the Radhadamodar. And he said that actually he got these rooms, and previously there was one tenant, and he was in one room and he was paying 3 rupees a month. So then he was invited, you take both rooms. So he told me, I didn't need much room. And this man, he had one room, he was paying 3 rupees. Now I have 2 rooms, but I had to put some of my money in to fix them up, so I'll give them 5 rupees. So with that then, paying 5 rupees a month, then he moved in to his Radhadamodar rooms. And I think that was probably around about 1960. Years later, I managed to get I got the original rental agreement that Prabhupada had signed with the Mahant from the Bamsi Gopal Temple. And that one ran from 1959, I think, to 1961. So sometime during 59 to 61, that was when Prabhupada did the transit from Bamsi Gopal to the Radhadamodar Mandir. He got those rooms fixed up, and then he moved in. And that was when he started work on the Srimad Bhagavatam. And of course that was Prabhupada's life's work, to translate the Srimad Bhagavatam, and it was a preparation ready for his going to the West. So I was talking with Srila Prabhupada, and he was in a very open mood, and I saw there was an opportunity here, that he was talking about the Radhadamodar Mandir and his living there. And I had previously been told by Hari Kesh that when Prabhupada was staying in the Radhadamodar, he had had some visit from Srila Rupa Goswami, that Rupa Goswami had actually appeared to Srila Prabhupada and given him some kind of instructions about preaching in the West. So he didn't know any of the details, and I was very, very, naturally very curious about this incident. And I thought, if I ever get the chance, I'm going to ask Srila Prabhupada about this. So this was early on, I guess. I heard about that maybe in December or January of 76. January 76. So later then, in July of 76 in London, we're looking at this picture, and Prabhupada's talking, you know, very fondly and openly about his stay in the Radhadamodar Mandir. So I thought, well, this is a good chance. And Prabhupada mentioned to me, he said, actually, he said, everything was being dictated by superior. So I thought, well, this is it. This is the cue. So then I asked him, I said, well, Srila Prabhupada, I heard that when you were staying there in these rooms, that Srila Rupa Goswami appeared to you and gave you some instructions about preaching. So then Prabhupada's mood changed slightly, and he said, oh, everybody knows that. He said, it is common knowledge. And then he didn't say anything more, he changed. So that was it. He confirmed that there was something there that had happened, but he didn't tell me what. And I never got a chance to ask him again, because it was obvious he wasn't going to, you know, give any details, so I didn't want to intrude. And I never got the opportunity to broach the subject with him again. So that was in 1976. So last year, 2004, a book came out. It was a compilation of interviews which had been put together by our god sister, Mula Prakriti Dasi. She left a body, I think, was it last year or the year before?
Last year
in Vrindavan. So she put this book out, Our Srila Prabhupada, Friend to All. So in that book, I was reading it, and I came across an interview with this man, Gopal Chand Ghosh. I think that's his name, Gopal Ghosh. He works at the Vrindavan Research Institute. So he was recalling how he used to go and visit Srila Prabhupada when he was at the Radha Damodar Mandir and when he was writing. So at that time, Gopal Ghosh was about 20 years old. And Prabhupada, of course, was living there as a sannyasi. So he used to go there and he would offer his respects. So he recalls in that interview, he says that one time he went there and Srila Prabhupada had a very heavy cold and he was kind of covered with blanket like this and suffering a little bit from this cold. Then the next day that he went, then he saw that he was all right and he was working, writing some of his commentaries. So he was a little surprised and he said, oh, so you're feeling okay today? So then Prabhupada said, yes. But he said it was a little mysterious, that the way that he said it. Oh, yes. So that he pushed him a little bit, and then Prabhupada told him, he said, that during the night, he said, my Gurudev had come to me, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, and he gave me instructions about writing this Bhagavatam. He said, I was too much anxious for the writing of this Bhagavatam, so my Gurudev came, and he told me, now you do work like Rupa Goswami, like Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, like Narottam Das. So he said, Prabhupada was very happy, and he said, now I've got the mercy from my Guru Maharaj. He said, now I've got the power to do this work. So then later on, he said, sometime in the winter time, he again came to see Prabhupada. And when he came to see Prabhupada, he was chanting on his beads. And he said as he was chanting, his eyes were tearing. He was pouring with tears. So he was, again, a little surprised. So he asked him, is there anything, you know, something has happened? So Prabhupada didn't say anything to start with. But again, he asked him, was there, you know, is there something that happened you want to say? So then Prabhupada told him, he said that during the night time, some very beautiful personalities had come to him during the night. One of them, he was very effulgent, older. He was just wearing kopin, and he had large japamala around his neck. And he was very beautiful, effulgent personality. And then next to him, there was another personality, a little older and taller, and same appearance. And then behind them, there was a much younger sadhu, it was very beautiful, with eyes like lotus petals. And Prabhupada told him it was Rupa Goswami and Sanatan Goswami and Jiva Goswami. And he said that they had given him instructions about how to write the Bhagavatam and about his future preaching work. So then he said that was all he would tell me. And then he didn't say anything more. So that was, you know, during the early 60s, I guess, 61, 62, just when Prabhupada was working on his Bhagavatam. And so we can understand the significance of the Radha Damodar rooms being in that temple there. That was a period for Srila Prabhupada where you could say that his devotional service intensified to the highest degree. That was, you know, when he was doing his preparation work for his future preaching. And I remember one story, and I don't know, what maybe Sridhakirti or Yadabhara Prabhu can confirm this. Upendra Prabhu, who had been Prabhupada's personal servant, I think in 67, and then again he came on for the last 6 or 8 months in 1977. He told me one time that they had asked Prabhupada how long did it take for him to perfect his chanting, and that Prabhupada had replied, 30 years. Did you ever hear that? It was a story that Upendra used to tell us. So he said 30 years. So if you look and see that Prabhupada was initiated in 1933, 30 years puts him right there in the Radha Damodar Mandir, 1963. And, you know, that was when he had these visits from his Guru Maharaj, from Rupa and Sanatan Goswami, Jiva Goswami, and got these instructions about writing the Bhagavatam and how to present that for the population of the whole world. So, Radha Damodar, it's a very, very important place, and Prabhupada was very keen that we maintain that. And in fact, in 1976, when we were there at Kartik time in Vrindavan, then Gagamuni, then Swami, and Gurudas Swami, they had come to see Prabhupada, and he gave them some instructions that they should go and they should live in Prabhupada's rooms at the Radha Damodar, that he wanted them to be maintained in their original condition. And he gave some instructions that they could cook and offer that to Prabhupada every day, and that they should get some of the offerings that were made to Radha Damodar and bring that prasadam and then cook some other, and then together they should offer that every day to Srila Prabhupada in his rooms. So I think since that time some of the devotees have been doing that. So that was established there during Karatik time in 1976.
Speaking about Radha Damodar, we were very fortunate to visit Radha Damodar in 1971 when Srila Prabhupada first brought his disciples back. That was a year earlier than October 72. And that was, again, as Sridhakirti Prabhu mentioned, a very wonderful homecoming for Srila Prabhupada to bring his Western disciples back. Of course, in 1967, he was also came back with only one disciple. But this was more like 30 disciples in 1971. There's films of that, for those of you who have seen the films. One of the films is of Prabhupada being carried in a palanquin in the Varshana area. Prabhupada at that time took us on a tour of Vrindavan. There's that famous shot of Prabhupada bathing in the Jamuna. So that was that time, his first time back to Vrindavan with a large group. And Srila Prabhupada gave Gurudas the key to his room in Radha Damodar, and we were fortunate enough to be there when it was opened. And Prabhupada's instructions was to take everything and just throw it away. So I remember Gurudas opening the trunk and finding all this literature. He found BTGs, there was the Easy Journey to Other Planets books. So he distributed some. We still have some of that material. Also, I believe there was a flyer announcing Prabhupada's departure from India to the West. You'll see that in our Your Ever Well Wisher film. Mm-hmm. Plus, I'm sure, archives, publications. And I remember when we first went to that room, I remember looking around and seeing a little piece of paper stuck to the wall, and it was an itemized list of all the electrical bills for many months. Prabhupada was very meticulous about keeping track of where, how his money was spent. And of course, there are many stories about that later on in developing his ISKCON movement, how careful he was to spend properly. At the same time, if Prabhupada had a large project that he felt was important, he'd spend lavishly. But he didn't want anyone to waste even a pice on frivolous things. Back to Shruto.
I had heard is actually what they had to do was burn it all.
Yeah.
They took it to the Jamuna River and they had a big fire and they couldn't believe they were doing this because these were historical documents. And like you say, there was, Prabhupada had accounting books, and if he bought a banana, he accounted for it, how much everything cost was in there. There were so many things, but he didn't want anything that was from his previous time to be there, and he ordered them. He said, you have to burn everything. He said, so they took it to the Jamuna, and he said, river and Gurudas and Jamuna, they, with great regret, they followed Prabhupada's instructions.
Some of that was saved.
Yes,
a little bit, yeah, because when we got there, I mean, when I got there in 75, and I became the temple commander, one day I remember, I think Dhananjaya, he turned up and he had that trunk, and there was still some things left inside it. And then Dhanadhar Maharaj was just telling me that later on, when he was in the Gurukul, then they just one day somebody happened to find this trunk. It was just, you know, lying in some room somewhere. And they opened it up, and inside the trunk there was still some of that literature, you know, some of the League of Devotees, some pamphlet and other things. And he said, included in that was a little scrap of paper, and it was the Sannyas Mantra that was, it had been handwritten from when Prabhupada took Sannyas. So they'd handwritten the Sannyas Mantra on this scrap of paper and given it to him. And it was still in the trunk. This was like 78 or 79. It was still lying there. Sorry to interrupt. Go on.
As long as we're in Radha Damodar temple still, I'll tell one more story, Radha Damodar story. I told this in Vrindavan, Srila Prabhupada's disappearance day there in the evening. We were having some talks, and I mentioned the story in there. And this also happened at the same time. It was at the end of Kartik. And anyway, as what happened was, it was in Vrindavan at that time, again, there was no facility. So the devotees had to stay wherever they could find facility, Keshigat Palace, different ashrams they were staying. Only Prabhupada and his party were staying at Radha Damodar Temple. So during the day, you would never see the devotees, you know, because they were taking care of their bodies, which was, it was not an easy thing at that time. Often they were sick with dysentery and jaundice and malaria, and they would have to try to figure out how to eat, you know, and be clean. And for us, this was difficult. We weren't used to doing these things in India. It was very difficult. And in Vrindavan, it could be quite difficult. Myself, even though I was with Prabhupada, I was finding it a little difficult. And I had nice facility, and I had Jamuna cooking for Prabhupada, so I was getting very nice prasadam every day. But the others, I would hear stories sometimes. So during the day, again, no one was there. But one day, Prabhupada was sitting in his room, and he saw this devotee walking around in the courtyard. And he said, "Who is this?" He said, "Who is this devotee? Call him." So I went and I found this devotee, this big fellow, and I called him in. It was Paramahamsa. Paramahamsa at the time was maybe 18-year-old brahmachari. And somehow or other, he was there at Radha Damodar Temple that day. So Prabhupada was curious, and he said, "Have him come here." So we went in, we offered obeisances, and was sitting there, and he's sitting there, and he just looks at this big fellow from Boulder, Colorado area in the USA, mountain area, and he asked him his name, and then he said, what are you doing here? Because no one else was around. And he said, oh, myself and my godbrother, who was another brahmachari, he said, we've been traveling around in India. They were independent at this time, which was also very, very unusual. In ISKCON society, no one was independent, right? You didn't go to India sometimes for 10 years unless the temple president arranged and got you a ticket to go to India, because you didn't have any money. They had no possibility. But they were traveling around in India, they said, and doing some preaching. And Prabhupada said, oh, very nice. He said, and after this, he said, after this program, then what will you do? And he said to Prabhupada, oh, we thought that we would go to Vietnam and preach. So Prabhupada's eyes, you see, sometimes his eyes opened up very wide. And he said, yes. He said, Acha, Vietnam? Vietnam is like Iraq now. This was Vietnam in the late 60s, early 70s. The United States, of course, was having this horrible war in Vietnam, and people were dying. Most people in America were against the war. It was just a very horrible scene there that was going on. And I think at the time then Johnson came in and intensified bombing. So it was a very dangerous place. So when he said that to Prabhupada, Prabhupada became very excited that they would go to such a place to preach Krishna consciousness. So then Prabhupada looked at him and he said, you should take sannyas. He was an 18-year-old boy. I've been a devotee for maybe 1 year. And Prabhupada was offering him sannyas. And he became startled at the idea. Is what was going on was there was going to be sannyas initiations right there, the Radha Damodar temple in the courtyard, in the evening of Ras Lila. There was a fire sacrifice, fire jagya. So Prabhupada told him. And he saw that he was a little bit bewildered and wasn't certain. He had some uncertainty. So Prabhupada told him, he said, you go into the courtyard and you sit down in front of Srila Rupa Goswami's samadhi. He said, and you chant. He said, and you ask Srila Rupa Goswami if you should take sannyas. He said, and then you come back and tell me. So Paramahamsa is telling me this story. And of course, he went down, this young boy, and he's sitting there chanting. And of course, in ISKCON society, sannyasi was a very wonderful thing, huh? That every brahmachari looked forward to at some point. So he said, the more he chanted, the more he's thinking, yes, sannyas. I should take sannyas. Prabhupada's offering. So he's thinking, this is a good idea, very good idea. So the next day, went right back in and saw Prabhupada and said, yes, Prabhupada, we would like to take sannyas. It's a good idea. So Prabhupada said, okay, very good. He said, so you tell my secretary, Shyamasundar was his secretary at the time, my godbrother Shyamasundar Prabhu. You tell Shyamasundar to take you to Lohi Bazaar, and there you'll purchase fresh cloth and bamboo, right? Your three bamboo to make a danda. He said, and then he said, on the evening of Ras Lila, he said, we'll have fire jagya in the courtyard right in between Srila Rupa Goswami Samadhi and Bhajan Kutir. We'll have a fire jagya and you'll get sannyas initiation. So then Prabhupada sent him out. So Paramahamsa went. Paramahamsa, again, he was a young boy. Nobody really knew this Paramahamsa and Parabhajakacharya. They were unknown brahmacharis.
Harry was there as well.
Okay. Yeah, yes. And he went to Shyamasundar, and he told him what Prabhupada said. Shyamasundar, he was a devotee from 1967, and he had been Prabhupada's secretary for some time. And he was very... very accomplished secretary for Srila Prabhupada. So immediately he started laughing at Paramahamsa. He said, "You're not getting sannyas." Paramahamsa said, "Yeah, Prabhupada said." He said, "Prabhupada didn't tell me anything." He said, "If he didn't tell me," he said, "then it's not happening because Prabhupada tells me everything, you know." Paramahamsa said, "Yes, Prabhupada said." He said, "Go ask Prabhupada. He said it. I'm getting sannyas." He was getting all nervous. So Shyamasundar Prabhu, he went and asked Prabhupada, and Prabhupada confirmed it. He said, "Yes, they're getting sannyas. These boys, no one knew." He said, "They're going to Vietnam to preach." So, then he took them. But what happened in the meantime, other godbrothers are finding out who are getting this sannyas initiation. So they became a little disturbed that these young boys, one of them was saying, one who was taking sannyas at that time, he said, "They don't even know any shlokas," he said. "They can't even chant shlokas from Bhagavatam, from Bhagavad Gita." He said, "What is their qualification?" So all these arguments started coming up that they were working around the system. They hadn't been devotees long enough. They could hardly even give classes what to chant Sanskrit shlokas. But anyway, whatever they said, it didn't matter. Prabhupada had made his decision. So that night, they were part of the ceremony and they received sannyas. And Prabhupada said there, at that time, he said, Srila Rupa Goswami came to the fire sacrifice and he was present there. So it was a very wonderful, very auspicious event, again, in which Srila Prabhupada was showing everyone in Braj now. He was showing all the Goswamis, whoever, all the people living there. He was giving this initiation to his disciples, and he was giving sannyas to his disciples. Everyone always asked, "No, I don't know, even if they went to Vietnam afterward." I think maybe they changed their plans, but they did get sannyas. And just a few years later, Paramahamsa Swami, and I was Prabhupada's servant at the time, he became Prabhupada's secretary. So together we were Prabhupada's secretary and servant, and we had many nice travels with Prabhupada all around the world. And it was also funny, when he became Prabhupada's secretary, it was in Juhu, and is what he did. So immediately he went into Prabhupada's room. Prabhupada would call. Prabhupada rang his bell. It meant servant went in. That's all it meant. Servant goes in. So he said, "Get Paramahamsa." So every time I would get Paramahamsa, he would go into Prabhupada's room. And we would always offer obeisances, say pranams, say our prayers to the spiritual master. So he went in and he does dandavats, this big 6-foot body. He laid down and he would chant to Prabhupada. Then he kept chanting different mantras in glorification of Srila Prabhupada. So I said by this time he knew many mantras he had learned. So he would go down and he would just start chanting different prayers of Srila Prabhupada in Sanskrit. And he did this for maybe 3 days. So he said the one day he went in and he was in front of Prabhupada's desk and he's chanting and chanting. And Prabhupada yelled at him. He said, "Sit up." He said, "How are we going to get any work done with you down there chanting?" He said. So from that time on, he stopped all the extra mantras. This was Paramahamsa. I'll be here for a few days. I'll tell you more stories about Paramahamsa Swami and myself. A very enjoyable devotee, very wonderful devotee of Srila Prabhupada.
Yeah. Actually, you mentioned also Paribrajakacharya. So the two of them, Paramahamsa, Paribrajakacharya, they were given sannyas together. And he also, Paribrajakacharya, he did some very wonderful preaching for Prabhupada. You went to Tehran in 75, and I went with Prabhupada in 1976. So in August of 76, we were there for about a week in Tehran, in Iran. Of course, in those days, it was still under the Shah of Iran, and it was just not long before the revolution took place. But in those days, Westerners, they were not exactly welcome, but they were able to move freely in the country. because, of course, the Shah of Iran had a close connection, you know, with the American government. That was how he got reinstated after he'd been kicked out once before. So our devotees were living there. There were three householder couples. There was a Treya Rishi and his wife and son. And he was a Parsi, actually. He was from, not a Parsi, he was a Zoroastrian, I think. He was from Iran. And there was also Navayovanadas and his wife, Manjari, and their newly born son. They were old friends, the two of them. And there was Dayananda and Nandarani, who were, I think Dayananda was practically the first temple president in Los Angeles in 68. So they were there. So three householder couples, and then there was this one sannyasi, Paribrajakacharya. And he was doing some amazing preaching at that time. He had actually gotten some connection. He was expert in Hatha Yoga. So as a means of just gradually introducing Krishna consciousness, he had used the medium of Hatha Yoga. So in his Hatha Yoga classes, he got some connection with a relative of the Shah of Iran. And then that relative told the niece of the Shah of Iran about these yoga classes. So she started coming, and she was so impressed that she started inviting Paribrajakacharya to come and give personal lessons, private lessons, at the palace. So every week he was going to the Shah of Iran's palace into the inner section where they said that in 2,000 years no Westerner had ever been allowed inside that palace, you know, in the areas that he was going in. But he was going in and he was teaching them yoga. And as a result of that, later on in 77, when the Shah's niece, they were traveling in America, they came to Los Angeles and they visited our Los Angeles temple and they had a guided tour. They saw the diorama exhibits and they were very, very impressed with everything. And they were even making arrangements to have the printing of the Ishapanishad in Persian, because in those days it was still a tight society and the government had to approve any publication. So it was very difficult to get anything published, but because they were relatives of the Shah, then they were making arrangements so that the Ishapanishad could be translated and published. So a very important connection. And there's this BBT picture of baby Krishna. It's a famous painting where Krishna's sitting and he's looking. He's got very big eyes and he has a pot next to him and he's eating the yogurt. So that original was given to the Shah of Iran's niece, and they took that back and they had that hanging in the palace of the Shah of Iran. This is a Muslim country and it's got Krishna hanging there in the. So this was all due to Paribrajakacharya's preaching there. And in I guess October of 77, just in the Prabhupada's last 6 weeks there, Atreya Rishi and Paribrajakacharya came to see Srila Prabhupada in Vrindavan. And when they came in and they told Prabhupada everything that had been happening since our visit there in 76, Prabhupada was so pleased he started crying. And he called Paribrajakacharya over and he was rubbing him very affectionately on the head. And he told him, he said, "You are a great Rishi," like this. So he gave him very much encouragement because of his preaching there.
Would you like to say something?
Okay. Say whatever you like.
He's got nothing in his, he's got brain power.
One thing Yadabara mentioned there before was about how meticulous Prabhupada was when they took this trunk from the Radhadamodar. Prabhupada had records, not just for the electricity bills, but every single thing that he purchased for every day, for every week, for every month. He had it all recorded down. 25 paisa for a rickshaw ride. You know, 1 rupee, 30 paisa for vegetables. Like everything that he, every single paisa was all recorded down. So Prabhupada was very, very meticulous. And a couple of experiences that I had with Prabhupada on that was on August the 18th of 1976. We were here in Bombay at Juhu. Of course, in those days, we were in Prabhupada's old quarters in the apartment buildings at the back of the land. Now, that's all gone. I was just... this is the first time I've been back in Bombay since 1998. And, of course, I knew they had some plans for redeveloping the land there, but I was very shocked when I walked around yesterday afternoon at Juhu, because all the old buildings have just gone, including Prabhupada's old quarters there. Anyway, I had a few heart pangs, because, you know, I'd served Prabhupada in those quarters quite a few times. But anyway, April the 19th, 1976, we were about to set off for Australia on the first leg of what proved to be Prabhupada's last world tour. So the evening before, we had been up on the roof. Prabhupada very much enjoyed sitting on the in the open air on the roof of those buildings. They were three stories high, and they were just the level of the palm trees. So when you were on the roof, you'd see these nice palm fronds everywhere, just level with you, and nice breeze blowing, and Prabhupada would have his darshans up there. So a few people had come that evening, not many, and as is the custom, one of the men that had come to see him, he just put 10 rupees at Prabhupada's feet as he was sitting on the asana. So then the darshan finished, Prabhupada went downstairs, and I gathered up whatever was there. I took his cup and the seat and this 10 rupee note. So I had a waistcoat, so I just slipped it in the pocket of my waistcoat, thinking, you know, I'll give this to Prabhupada later on. And I didn't think anything more of it. So we went downstairs, and then, of course, Prabhupada took rest an hour or so later. He translated in the night. We got up very early in the morning. Pushtakrishna was the secretary at that time, I think 3:30. And then I gave Prabhupada his massage at 4:30, because we were going to be flying for the whole day. So he had his massage very early, then he took his bath, and then by 7 a.m. we were ready to go. And I went into Prabhupada's room to inform him, now we've packed everything up and the car is there, we're all ready to go to the airport. And Prabhupada was sitting, he had his tilak on and fresh clothes, and he chanted his Gayatri, and he was just waiting for us, you know, to move. So he sat there. I said, okay, Srila Prabhupada, we can go now. So then Prabhupada didn't move. And he looked at me. He said, so? He said, you have something? And I couldn't, for the life of me, think, you know, what it was, because we'd been so busy for like 3 or 4 hours early in the morning, packing everything up. We were going on, you know, it was my first tour outside of India with Srila Prabhupada, so I was, you know, desperately trying to think whether I had everything in the suitcase. I was, you know, I didn't want to leave anything behind. And Prabhupada had me grind up some dried neem leaves. I had those in a little bag and so many things, different items. So I just, you know, my brain was full. So when he said, so, you have something? I couldn't think what he was talking about. And I looked puzzled. And then Prabhupada was looking at me, and he was looking at my pocket. And he said, no, you have something? And then I suddenly remembered I had this 10 rupees from the night before that he'd been given in his darshan, and it was still in my pocket. So I pulled it out. Prabhupada said, ha, very good. And he took that 10 rupees, and then he said, now bring Giriraj. So Giriraj was the temple president. Giriraj came in. He said, you deposit this in such and such an account. 10 rupees. And then that was it. Then he said, all right, now we can go. And there's another example about late 1976. Prabhupada decided to have me start keeping his accounts. He kept a double accounting system. And years later, I heard from Vrindavan Day, Prabhupada's youngest son, that in the 1940s, Prabhupada had had his money in a bank, and the bank had failed, and he lost a huge amount of money in this bank failure. So Prabhupada never trusted the banks. And of course, he knew that they always make mistakes, and sometimes he also knew that some of those mistakes were deliberate. So he was very not trusting of banks. So he would keep his own double accounting system. The banks had their records, but he would never trust, you know, the statements that they would give for his different accounts. He would have his own set of accounts, and we had to very meticulously, any deposits or withdrawals, we had to record all that down. We had to calculate the interest. And around about that time then, in late 76, Prabhupada had given a loan to the Hyderabad temple. He sent some money down, I forget how much it was. And then Mahamsa Swami was down there in Hyderabad. After a couple of days, he contacted Srila Prabhupada, and he said, I went to the bank, and they said that the money's not there. So then Prabhupada had us check it, and then they said from Delhi that now the money's been sent. So it took about 5 or 6 days, and then the money finally appeared in the account in Hyderabad. So Prabhupada then, he wrote a letter to the bank, and he had calculated how much interest had been accumulated between the sending of the money from Delhi and its appearing in the account in Hyderabad. There was like a 5 or 6 day gap. So Prabhupada wrote to them and he insisted, now you pay me this interest for the time that the money was in transit, and they had to pay it. So Prabhupada was very, very careful, very conscious that everything that he had was given by Krishna and had to be utilized very carefully.
I was with Prabhupada as his servant for just about 2 years, just over 2 years. And I remember, almost can remember the day, and Prabhupada in his party, he had all his luggage. And during those years, he had what was called the white bag. It was Prabhupada's white bag. And it was about half the size of a briefcase, and it was a small vinyl bag. You can see it in some pictures. And whoever is carrying that bag, he was trusted, because it didn't go to anyone easily. And I remember I was with Prabhupada for about a year before he finally said, Shrutakirti can hold the bag. And it was a great honor to know that Prabhupada had that faith in you, because in this bag, many items were in this bag, a lot of his personal effects that would be on his desk, things as simple as his silver ear cleaner, a nail cutter, to his tilak, his mirror. He had a nice, beautiful silver mirror with ivory carving on the front. But then there would be his dakshin that sometimes would come along, cash, checks, and some passbooks from banks here in Bombay and Delhi, like that. So these would all be in this white bag of Srila Prabhupada's. So, and he always knew where this white bag was. And if you were entrusted with it, of course, you certainly had to know. And it was something I remember. There were two things I remember I felt so good. The other was one day Prabhupada had me go to the bank to make a deposit. And he must have told me 3 times what I had to do when I went to the bank as far as the transaction went and getting the receipt, making sure you did this, making sure you did this. As he said, Prabhupada didn't trust these banks. Still had to work with them, just like today we don't trust them, but still sometimes they're required. But it was always a wonderful thing when you see. So when you see pictures, you'll see Prabhupada coming from the airport, you'll see the different devotees who have this white bag, which later on became the red bag in Australia. That's a whole story. The devotee who managed to get Prabhupada's white bag has a really wonderful story. We heard that story in Mayapur this last spring at the festival there. But these things are all so sweet. But in many times, as Prabhupada was so careful about each paisa. We hear each rupee. He was also very giving when he wanted to be with his disciples who were engaged in service. And I can tell so many experiences when Prabhupada had me get this white bag once was for myself. I remember I was with Prabhupada the first time 16 months and I left. And at that time I got married and he was in New Dwarka. And he said, go to my Elmira. That was his metal cabinet he always had in every, most of his places where he had semi-permanent residence. If he would stay for a few weeks or a month or two, he always had his metal cabinet that could be locked up. And in there, that would where he would keep belongings. And, of course, his white bag would be in there. So sometimes he would say that. This time he called me in. So he said, go get my white bag. So I went and got his white bag. And he sat down. And everything Prabhupada did, I was just watching Prabhupada opening his bag was something that you just, you become overwhelmed, you know, just by seeing Prabhupada's movement, how carefully and with such transcendental, just like he was describing when Prabhupada just looked at his pocket. And Prabhupada had a way of doing things, everything he did, that's what, and as a servant, you would begin to recognize how Prabhupada did things and showed you things. Like the fan in Vrindavan, he would just go like that. And it meant turn the fan on. And if it was off, or if it was on, it meant turn it off. So he would just give you a look.
Yeah.
He wouldn't even speak. He would just look and you had to know what to do. And same in Vrindavan, he would just look at those French doors. He would just look at them and go open the doors, open so the breezes could come in. So he had such a wonderful way. And if you didn't pick up, then he would have to speak. So that wasn't as good. Best thing was, like he said, you'd, oh yes, I have something here. He would do that even with mail in your pocket. Someone would come in the room and he would go, what is that letter? You know, if you didn't respond, it was, what is that letter in your pocket? He was always interested in mail coming in. So the white bag, he would open it up so nicely. And he took two rings out of the bag. And he said, this is for you and your wife. So he gave rings. Anyway, so many things.
You still got that ring?
Oh, no. That's another bad... So many things I've lost. Once in New Dwarka, it was very cold. New Dwarka in Los Angeles, sometimes in the winter, it would get very cold. At least it seemed cold there. And he saw me on the floor. I had... The servants' quarters was just down... It was just like a flat. Prabhupada had two rooms, and then there was a hallway, and there was this bathroom, and then next to that there was another room, and that was the servants' quarters at the time. And I was in there, and I used to cook in there, and I had on the floor, just like you have here, this little gas stove. It was a two-burner gas stove, and it was right on the floor. And it was so cold at night that I had the burners on for warmth to heat me. And Prabhupada in there, he was like to walk around. He would chant japa, walk back and forth, up and down the hallway, through his rooms. He would just do this little circle, you know, he would do. And he looked in, and he saw me. I was already asleep, lying there. And he said, because as soon as I heard him, I would wake up. And he said, don't you have a blanket? And I said, no, Prabhupada. I was, when I traveled with him, I would always let everything go. I just had a chadar. That was my blanket, was my chadar. And he said, come. So we walked back. He said, go open the Elmira, he said. So I was all excited, you know. Inside, there were so many things. Devotees were always giving Prabhupada blankets and quilts and sweaters and
socks.
So I opened it up, and he said, so take some quilt, some blanket, anyone you want, he said. So I looked in there, and it was this beautiful quilt. It was like satin on one side, silk on the other, and it was bright saffron, you know. And I said, is this okay? He said, yes, take it. He said, you have to be warm. He said, take it. So I took it. So then for so long I had this. I was using it every night. He stayed there over a month. And one night, one afternoon, one of the devotee boys said, why don't you sleep in the temple room sometime with it? They're always trying to get me to, there's a couple of devotees, we became friends. He said, we sleep in the temple room at night on the floor. I said, I can't do that. I have to be up. He said, does Prabhupada ever call you at night? I said, nah, you know. I said, but I have to be there early in the morning. So go up early in the morning. So anyway, one night I went down there and I slept. And I took this quilt with me that Prabhupada had given me. And as soon as he saw it, he said, what is that? I said, oh, I said, it's the quilt Prabhupada gave me. And I could just see his eyes. He is looking. And I said, do you want it? He said, yeah, can I have it? So I gave it to him. So a few nights went by, and I'm up in my room. There I am. I have the burners on again. And Prabhupada's walking back and forth, and he looks inside. He says, where is your blanket? So I told him what happened. I said, this devotee, I was in the temple room, and on and on. And he just shook his head. He looked at me. He said, go to the Elmira and get another one. He said, and don't give it away this time. I said, yes, Prabhupada. So I went in, I got another blanket. And I gave that away eventually as well. But it was always, we'd give everything. Tell sometime about we'd give money away too.
Actually, when I was traveling, we left India in April of 76, and then from Australia we went to New Zealand, New Zealand to Fiji. Then when we got to Hawaii, Prabhupada's quarters are there. This was in May. And there was a room next door which the servants used. So when we first, as soon as we arrived, then I started looking through all the cupboards. And I actually found a blue sleeping bag. And I had one, but mine wasn't that good. And then this blue sleeping bag, it was a better one. So then I took that one. And then I found out that it was actually Shrutakirti's. That he's saying that he didn't have anything or he kept losing things. So he left his sleeping bag in Hawaii and I got that. So that was what I was sleeping in for the rest of the time I was with Prabhupada. But you were mentioning about the bag, the white bag, and then I think in 74, then the white bag was exchanged for a red bag, which was a little bit bigger. Ugrasravadas in Australia, he gave him this new bag. So when I came on the party in November of 75, then that bag was being carried, I think, either by Hansaduta, who was the secretary, visiting secretary, or maybe Hari Kesh. But anyway, I didn't get to touch that bag. I knew it was special. You know, it was very important. Prabhupada kept it with him. As soon as he arrived in a new place, immediately he wanted to know where there was an Elmira. He could lock it up, and he would have the key. He would keep the keys very carefully, you know, tucked in his belt or just in the drawer with another key. He put that key on his Brahmin thread sometimes. Very careful. So in January of 76, we'd been here in Bombay, and then we flew from Bombay to Calcutta. It was like mid-January. And so when we left, Prabhupada turned to me and said, now you take this bag. So I got the red bag. So I was feeling, you know, very honored that Prabhupada's entrusting this bag with me. And Tamal Krishna Maharaj had come on as the secretary at that time. So he was saying, oh, he said, you better be really careful with that, you know, keep hold of it. So I knew this is really, really important. Of course, I was new. I'd only been on the party about 6 or 7 weeks at that time. And I was still learning everything. And I was very nervous. I've got this bag now. This has really got a lot of, you know, important documents and artifacts of Srila Prabhupada's in there. So we got on the aeroplane, and then we took off, and then Prabhupada decided he wanted to go to the bathroom. So I had the red bag underneath my seat, And Prabhupada was sitting next to the window, and I was sat next to him, and then Tamal Krishna Maharaj was opposite, in the opposite aisle. So I got up to let Prabhupada out to go to the bathroom, and I escorted him down the aisle. So I thought, now the red bag's under the seat, and nobody's sitting there. So I better take it. I wasn't sure what to do. So I picked up the bag and I started walking down the aisle on the aeroplane behind Srila Prabhupada to take him to the bathroom. So then Prabhupada got halfway down and he suddenly stopped and he looked. And he said, "What are you doing?" He said, "We're on an aeroplane." So I went back and put the bag underneath the seat again. But Prabhupada was laughing. Just not very practical. It wasn't going to go anywhere. We were on the aeroplane. So anyway, I learnt a little lesson there. But after that, then I always was looking after the red bag. And whenever Prabhupada would move from one place to another, it was like an art that you would try to arrange it so that the transition, leaving one place and arriving in the next place, that everything that Prabhupada used, his personal things, there was like a Shifa pen case, there was a bottle of ink, there was this little silver loter that we put water in for tilak, there was a ball of tilak, a little spoon and a lid, there was this Revlon manicure set, black manicure set. They have some nail clippers and some those implements that you use for cleaning out your ears and like that. There's so many different things. There was a small casket with some cardamom seeds in it. There was a small mortar and pestle that we use for grinding up medicine in the mornings. And, of course, these important documents. So the trick was that we would pack up and then go in Prabhupada's room and tell him we're ready to go now. Then Prabhupada would stand up and he would walk out. We'd put his shoes on and he would get his cane. And then as he was walking out, then I would run back. And then all the items that were on Prabhupada's desk, I'd gather them all up and throw them in the red bag. And then zip it up and then run out afterwards and get into the car. Then when we arrived at the destination place, then as we got out, then of course Prabhupada would be greeted by the devotees. So I'd grab the bags and I'd run in and then I'd take out the red bag and pull out all the things from his desk and then set them all out on the new desk. And then when Prabhupada walked in, his desk would be there set up exactly as it was when he just left the last place. So it was kind of a bit of fun to do that actually. And, you know, to run ahead and make sure that everything was exactly how it should be when Prabhupada walked into the room. So I did that for about a year and 14 months, 15 months. Then in 77, Sats Rup Maharaj, he came on the party as the visiting secretary. So he joined us in Bhubaneswar, I think in about late January, and he was supposed to be the secretary for the month of February. So from Bhubaneswar, we moved up to Calcutta, and then from Calcutta we went to Mayapur. So when we went from Calcutta to Mayapur, this was about February the 5th or so, Sats Rup Maharaj decided that, as the secretary, he wanted to carry the bag, right? So he came over and he said, "Give me the red bag." And I said, "No, I have to carry the red bag. This is one of my services." He said, "No," he said, "I'm the secretary. The secretary carries the red bag." So I thought, anyways, you know, he's so much senior and he's a sannyasi and he's been Prabhupada's servant before. And so I thought he can be trusted, yeah, because he had the experience. So we get in the car, he's got the red bag, and we drive off to Mayapur. So when we arrive in Mayapur, there's a big, huge reception. And then the car, we go in through the front gates, all the devotees are there dancing and chanting. They take the car all the way up to the entrance to what was then the temple. That's the Lotus building. And the temple was on the ground floor. So this car stops. Prabhupada gets out. Sats Rup gets out. I get out with Prabhupada. I'm not thinking about the bag anymore. because Satsvarup insisted, you know, I'm going to look after the bag, don't worry. So I follow Prabhupada into the temple room, we greet the deities, and we walk back to the Vyasasan. Prabhupada sits down, they start doing Guru Puja, there's about 100 devotees, you know, chanting very ecstatically and flowers everywhere. And right in the middle of it, Prabhupada looks at me as he's receiving Guru Puja. He calls me over. He says, "Where is my bag?" And I didn't know. And Prabhupada got really, really annoyed. He said, you know, I mean, he was really annoyed with me. He said, "Go and find it." So this was right in the middle of the Guru Puja. And I looked at Satsvarupa. I said, "Where is the bag?" And he said, "Oh, I forgot it." And he left it in the car. So I had to run out and then, you know, rummage in the car and bring the bag and run back. And that was it. I told Satsvarupa, I said, "That's it. You're not touching this bag again." And Prabhupada, when he saw it, said, "All right, good." You know, he was relieved. So very important.
He always knew everything that was going on. Prabhupada always knew what was going on
around.
Always. Always. He had one secretary, I remember, he said to him, "You don't move a pin on my desk from here to here unless you ask me." So he knew everyone, and he knew who he could trust and who he was not so trustworthy, even though they maybe have so many. He was sannyasi, you know, he was GBC, he was so many things. But Prabhupada said, "Don't do anything, not a pin," he said, "unless you ask me." So he had Prabhupada put
that?
Up.
Who was it? Tell us.
It was Brahmananda. Because sometimes we would do things. He just imagine who Prabhupada had working with him. He didn't have the best. Prabhupada had what Krishna provided us Americans and Europeans, as Prabhupada would say, addicted to intoxication, illicit sex, meat eating. He was in New Dwarka, he said to me, he was walking around chanting, and this Bombay thing, Juhu thing, from the time I became Prabhupada's servant, Juhu was there like a dark cloud, not like a Krishna dark cloud, it was like a dark cloud, very ominous dark cloud, and it was always, Prabhupada was getting these headaches, he would say, I'm giving him headaches, his disciples, because they didn't know how to deal with things, what to speak of in India. And he said, if it wasn't for the chanting of the Maha Mantra, he said, you Americans and Europeans, he said, you couldn't do anything in Krishna consciousness. He said, but for the chanting of the Hare Krishna Mantra, he said, you couldn't accomplish anything. But the fact was, if it wasn't for Prabhupada's chanting, even we were chanting, we couldn't accomplish anything. He literally empowered everyone. Like he said, these people went to Iran, the devotees who opened the temple, all around the world. There were Grahastha couples in London, going to Australia, Fiji, here and there. And what no one had done before, they were doing. But it was Prabhupada's potency. You know, that's the one thing we can see. And you could see it more after Prabhupada left, how much his personal form being here, how much it did, how much he accomplished. Just by his sheer desire, Krishna was fulfilling all his desires because he was a pure devotee of the Lord. And then after we left, it became apparent to so many of us how we had to cling to Prabhupada's instructions to have his presence, otherwise finished. And that we can see month after month, year after year. If one didn't cling to his instructions, then you were finished. So he did so much, but it was all his potency. And he was very happy to give credit to all his disciples doing so many things. Or he would just give it to his Guru Maharaj. He never took any credit for doing anything, Prabhupada. But he encouraged us so much. And this is why, just like we see here in this temple, is because Radhanath Maharaj is understood. You know, he can understand. I mean, Krishna consciousness is there. Just encourage. This is what Prabhupada did. He always encouraged every one of his disciples. Didn't matter
what they were doing. Some were chanting, some were not chanting, some were following, some were falling down. Always encouraged them in their service and gave them gratitude. He would say, this devotee, he has done so much. He might be sitting there. Sometimes they were in karmi clothes there with hair had grown out and they had gone away. He did it one time. He said, this devotee, he had to bring him in Hawaii. He brought him before him. He asked, he said, where is Aniruddha? Just passed away recently.
The old
Aniruddha.
Really?
Yeah, he passed away in Hawaii.
Wow.
And he was already gone. This was like 1973. He had already left, and he was in Hawaii just doing so many things. He had long hair. This was, we would say, blooped. We used to say a devotee blooped. And Prabhupada was at the airport, and he asked, he said, where is Aniruddha? And one of his disciples said, oh, Prabhupada, he's here, but he doesn't want to come before you. He's embarrassed because he's fallen. And Prabhupada said, bring him here. So, of course, he came up and offered obeisances, and Prabhupada just rubbed his head, his hair, and Prabhupada just rubbed it. And he had him sit right down beside him. He was sitting on the chair at the airport. He had him sit down. And he just started glorifying him for the next 15 minutes to everyone there. He said, this devotee, he has opened up the temple in Los Angeles. So he started like that. And, of course, by the end of it, this devotee, his head was down. He was feeling so enlivened because of Srila Prabhupada's mercy. But Prabhupada was a pure devotee. It's all he saw. That these devotees, Prabhupada's disciples, these, especially the ones that came so early, Prabhupada didn't see anything except what they had done to help him in establishing this society all around the world. And another time was also in Hawaii. He called, it was Gorsundar. He had, at one point, they sold the temple in Hawaii. Prabhupada was sending letters. It was the most terrible thing to do. The temple was there, established with deities. Tulsi Devi was growing in the gardens. And they left the temple, sold it. They gave money back to one devotee. He had made a deposit. The money was gone. Prabhupada was horrified. He couldn't understand how it could happen. How that Tulsi Devi was left, he said, just to dry up. He said, how can this be done? And how these devotees left. These were his senior devotees. They had done so much. So now this was 1973. Prabhupada asked to see him. It was in Hawaii. He had to come from the Big Island. He had established some farm thing. And I was massaging Prabhupada. And he came to see Prabhupada just by himself. He had long hair and he had a beard. Very intense look. He had these deep eyes and big eyebrows. And he looked so intense. And Prabhupada was just talking to him very nicely. And he didn't even respond. It was very, very strange. It was really strange, and I didn't know what was going on. You know, I was just this young boy. I didn't know anything. I didn't know the history. I knew nothing. But Prabhupada kept talking with him, just asking, just very congenially, asking him different things, what he was doing, and he just sat there. He wouldn't say anything. So finally, after 5 minutes or so, Prabhupada said, okay. He said, you can go. So he just walked up and he left. And I remember I was massaging Prabhupada's back. And he just said, he is a big rascal, he said, but I love him. And he started crying, you know. So this was the relationship Prabhupada has with his followers, with anyone that had done service, that he was just whatever. But Prabhupada never rejected anyone and still never does. You can see his mercy, you know, his. So many years later, it's all I see is Prabhupada's mercy every day. Otherwise, I have no business being here before the deities, an assembly of devotees, except for Srila Prabhupada's mercy. So you do a little bit of service in Krishna consciousness, and you just get heaps and heaps of more service. So that's Prabhupada's mercy, mercy of Krishna.
You were talking about Hawaii. And there was another devotee, actually, that had a reunion with Srila Prabhupada in Hawaii when we were there in 76, Hayagriva Prabhu. who, of course, everybody knows. He had, I think around 1972, he started having a lot of problems. He couldn't follow the principles. And then at some point they had to ask him to leave New Brindavan even. He had some problems there. So that way then, for a few years, he was kind of outside, not doing anything. Then in 1976, then he came back and offered himself up for some service again. And Prabhupada was in Hawaii for the whole month of May. And he had gone there particularly to work on his books. The idea being that, you know, in the middle of the Pacific Ocean there, you're not going to get too many disturbances or too many people, you know, coming for darshans and things like this. And the devotees had suggested that because the BBT had caught up with Prabhupada, he was doing his writing, and then within 1 month of Prabhupada completing a section of the Bhagavatam, then the BBT were able to get it out actually into print, which was a complete turnaround from the year before in 75, when Prabhupada had gone to Los Angeles for 2 months and discovered that there were over 20 books that were still waiting to be put into production and to be printed. And he had expressed his dissatisfaction with that and told the devotees, "Now I'm here for 2 months." He said, "I want all those books to be produced and put into print." And that was when they had that famous morning walk when they said, "But Prabhupada, that's impossible." And Prabhupada just said, "Impossible is a word in a fool's dictionary." And Rameshwar and Radha Ballabha were there. Radha Ballabha was the production manager. They immediately dropped off the walk. They didn't even finish the morning walk. They went straight back to the temple. They called a meeting amongst all the BBT devotees, the editors, the proofreaders, the compositors, the artists, anybody that was connected. And they said, "Now Prabhupada's told us that we have to put into print every book in the next 2 months." So they made a 24-hour shift system for doing all the work. And by the end of the 2 months, they actually managed to complete the entire Chaitanya Charitamrita, which was, I think, about 14 volumes, and then several volumes of the Bhagavatam. So by 76, Rameshwar had come to the Gaur Purnima festival. He took sannyas there. And then in Vrindavan afterwards, he reported to Prabhupada that the BBT was now caught up and there was nothing, no backlog. So he said, "Now we're hoping that you'll stay and do extra writing, you know, produce more. We want to see you encouraged." So Prabhupada agreed that he would stay in Hawaii for a month on the world tour just to increase his writing, which he did to a huge degree. He wrote about 6 or 7 times the amount that he normally wrote whilst we were there in Hawaii. So whilst we were in Hawaii, then we got this call from the BBT that Hayagriva's back and he wants to work on what was then called the philosophy book. So in 1970, when the devotees were here and Shyam Sundar Prabhu was here in Bombay, because he'd been a philosophy student, he had suggested to Prabhupada that, you know, we could do something like give a Vedic view of these Western philosophers. And he got a book with a summary of all the different Western philosophers, and he would read that to Prabhupada, or he would summarize their arguments and present them to Prabhupada, and Prabhupada would give the Vedic viewpoint on that. So Prabhupada was actually very enthusiastic about that book. And he thought that that would be something that we could distribute in the universities. But somehow or another, Shyama Sundar Prabhu didn't finish that task. Then it was lying, kind of not being done for a couple of years. So in 76 then, Hayagriva was asked, you know, to come to Hawaii and meet with Prabhupada and go over all that material. And he also had been studying. There were other philosophers that had not yet been dealt with. So then he flew to Hawaii to spend about 3 weeks with Srila Prabhupada to do this philosophy book. So I remember the day that he arrived. Actually, Radha Ballabha was there, the BBT producer. and we were sitting talking with Prabhupada in his room in the afternoon. Then there's this bang on the door, and the door opens, and there's Hayagriva. Because Hayagriva was a kind of a fairly impressive person, physically, very big, big boned, black, dark hair, and, you know, kind of very strong features. So he was a very imposing kind of character. And he walked in, and then he just hit the deck. He offered his full dandabats. And actually, before he got down, he walked in, he said, "It's your old Hayagriva, Prabhupada," like this. And then he hit the deck and offered his dandabats. And then he got up, and then Prabhupada called him over, and he had a really nice exchange with him for 5 or 10 minutes. He asked him about his wife and where his son was, and he was encouraging him, you know, that why don't you have your son come and live with you? You can live like a sannyasi, brahmachari, that kind of situation. And then at one point, Prabhupada stopped and he started reminiscing about how he'd first met Hayagriva on the streets in New York in 1966, and how he had invited him to come to his lectures in 22nd Avenue, and then how Hayagriva had, you know, because he was an English professor, he'd taken up doing the editing for his books. And then Prabhupada stopped, and he got really, really sentimental, transcendentally sentimental. And then he said, "I was thinking, has Hayagriva really left us?" And then he started crying. So at that point, then he stopped and he sent us out. But he was just thinking that Hayagriva really left us. And then he just started crying. It was amazing to see, actually. So Prabhupada had that kind of feeling for the devotees. He knew Hayagriva had been doing all kinds of nonsense. You know, he knew very well, you know, what his character was, and that he'd had so many troubles. But still, he couldn't forget that service that he'd done for him in the beginning. And he felt so much obliged to him. And actually, he was speaking about Gaurasundara. So at that time in Hawaii, again, Gaurasundara had come to see Srila Prabhupada. And the same thing happened. Although he was like clean and neat. He had shortish hair, and he had his own ashram someplace. And I think he got some, he had some household arrangements that weren't exactly according to our standard. So he came and he sat in front of Srila Prabhupada. Prabhupada asked him, "How's everything?" And then he started preaching to him, and he was encouraging him like anything for about half an hour, you know, to do some service, help the devotees in the temple, making suggestions to him how he could get involved. And Gaurasundara just sat there and never said a word. He just, you know, he heard everything. And then at the end of it, Prabhupada said, "Okay." And then he left. It was very strange. He would never say anything.
Indifferent. Indifferent almost.
Huh?
Indifferent.
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 Yeah, it was hard to judge what his mood was, actually. Because he didn't express anything. He didn't say anything. And then he left. He was polite. But that was it. And later on, Prabhupada was talking about him, and he said, "Well, you know, we could try. I've offered to him and made some suggestions, but he comes here and he doesn't say anything, and then he goes away. So what can be done?" So then later on, we were in Vrindavan, September, October, and then October the 9th, then we were due to go to Aligarh. And Prabhupada was going to do a 2-day program at the house of Surendra Kumar Saigal, who was the owner of the Tiger Lock Company. So we were going to spend 2 days there and then go to Delhi and then go to Chandigarh. So the day before that we were due to go to Aligarh, then all of a sudden in the afternoon, Gaurasundara turned up. And he'd come to Vrindavan to do some shopping for his ashram. He was going to buy some deities. So Prabhupada immediately was very warm and welcoming. And he said, "We're going to Aligarh tomorrow. It's only an hour away. Why don't you come with us?" So Gaurasundara agreed. So the next day we set off and he came with us. Then what happened was that I started feeling a little off during the daytime. And then in the evening time, after we'd had the program at the house there, maybe 70, 80 people came, all leading citizens of Aligarh. They came to Mr. Seigel's house on the front lawn, and Prabhupada gave a very nice lecture. And then we retired. He had his hot milk for supper, and then Prabhupada took rest. I walked into Prabhupada's room, and by this time it was probably about 11 o'clock at night. And there were other devotees staying other parts of the house, but by that time everybody was asleep. That was one of the servants' things, that you were the last person to go to sleep, because you had to massage Prabhupada late at night. So I came into Prabhupada's room. I got up next to him. He was lying on his bed. I got up and sat next to him. And as soon as I put my hands on his legs to start massaging him, my temperature just kind of suddenly shot up. And I lost every little bit of strength that I had. And I couldn't do anything. And I was so weak that I couldn't go more than 5 minutes. And I said, Prabhupada, I said, there's something wrong. I feel really sick. So I said, oh, okay. He said, then go and take rest and get somebody else to come in. So we had this British devotee. His name was Akshaya. And he was traveling with the party. And he was Prabhupada's door guard. So in the night time, he would sit out or he would sleep in front of Prabhupada's door. So this particular evening, he was outside the door sitting on a chair doing his guard duty. So I went out and I told Akshaya, I said, I think you'll have to come in and massage Prabhupada because I can't do it. I'm too sick. So I brought him in and I thought, well, he doesn't know what's to be done. I'll have to give him instructions. So as soon as he touched Prabhupada's feet, Prabhupada said, oh, his hands are wet. He didn't speak to Akshaya. He spoke to me. He said, oh, his hands are wet. And I said, Akshaya, I said, what's happening? And he said, oh, he said, yes, Prabhu. He said, I'm sweating. So he was so nervous that his hands were all clammy and wet from the sweat. So as soon as he touched him, Prabhupada said, all right, then no. So that was it for Akshaya. He lost his chance. I sent him back out to sit on his chair. And then I said, well, Prabhupada, what to do now? Everybody's asleep. So then Prabhupada said, well, Gaurasunda's here. He said, he used to massage me. He was my servant in 1967. So, of course, Gaurasunda had been out for a long time. And he'd just been invited, and he was staying overnight. So I thought, maybe, you know, he's asleep, he might not like it if I go and wake him up. But Prabhupada said, no, go and wake him up and ask him. So I went into our room. I woke him up. I said, you know, I can't do the massage. Prabhupada wants you to ask if you can come and massage him. So he immediately agreed. So it's very nice. So he came in and I thought, well, he knows how to do the massage, but I'm not going to go and take rest because, you know, this is an event. Prabhupada's having a reunion here with one of his old servants. So I thought there's sure to be some nectar going on here. Even though I was as sick as a dog, I could hardly stand up. I thought, I'm not going to miss out on this. So I sat down, and then Gaurasunda started massaging Srila Prabhupada. And then Prabhupada just very wonderfully started recalling some of the, you know, past service that Gaurasunda had done for him, how he and his wife, Govinda Dasi, who many of you will know, Govinda Dasi had been the secretary, and Gaurasunda was the servant. And they were artists, so they were also doing drawings of Lord Chaitanya's pastimes. And Prabhupada recalled how he had used those line drawings that they'd done in the first edition of the teachings of Lord Chaitanya. So he was very much appreciating the service that they'd done and glorifying Gaurasunda like anything. Gaurasunda wasn't saying much, but, you know, he was smiling and like this. And then Prabhupada recalled how one time Govinda Dasi had come in and she had asked if she could massage Prabhupada because she was envious of her husband that he was massaging Prabhupada every day and she wanted to massage Prabhupada. And then Prabhupada said, but I told her no. He said, I'm a sannyasi. You can't touch me. And then he said, and then she started crying. And then he laughed like anything. But thinking about Govindadasi crying because she couldn't massage him. And Gaurasundara was laughing. So in this way, he had a very nice exchange with Gaurasundara. Then finally, we went and took rest after about 20 minutes. And he actually stayed on the party. He hadn't planned to, but he stayed with us for about 3 or 4 days. And I contracted malaria. That also, I had to rely on Prabhupada. Next day, I was on my back. I couldn't move. And it was coming and going. And then Prabhupada called for he had the devotees call a doctor. And of course, Prabhupada had a medical background. He was a pharmacist for many, many years. That's how he made his living. So when the doctor came, I was, you know, on the not-so-bad cycle, where I was feeling almost normal. And so the doctor came and he examined me and said, oh, you just got a cold. And off he went. He gave me some prescription. And then Prabhupada called me in. He said, the doctor came? I said, yeah. He said, what did he say? I said, well, he said, I've got a cold. He said, then nonsense. He said, you've got malaria. He knew immediately. So he had the devotees go and get me some malaria medicine. And of course, that was what I had. So I was kind of out of it for 3 or 4 days. And then Gaurasundara, he just took over. And he became Prabhupada's, you know, full-time servant for those few days. And we traveled to Delhi. We were there a couple of days. And then we traveled up to Chandigarh. Then by the time we got to Chandigarh, then I was starting to feel normal again after the first day. And I informed Prabhupada and Gaurasundara, and he was just starting to feel a little bit sick at that time. And he had his business to do in Vrindavan. So anyway, off he went the next day, and that was it. That was the last we saw of him. But somehow or another, he just got that little bit of mercy from Prabhupada that, you know, Krishna brought him back, and he got that 3 or 4 days of, you know, very nice personal service again.
I don't have any bag stories or
anything.
I also, just a couple of things that you mentioned about, I'll just speak a little bit. I also massaged Prabhupada, had one chance in here in at Akash Ganga building at Warden Road, and I blew it also. Actually, I did the massage, but my hands were also sweating. I was so nervous. And then during the massage, Prabhupada, he mentioned, he said, your hands are wet.
He didn't like wet
He didn't
hands.
Like that.
No, he didn't like wet hands.
No.
Wet but hands, it was very, very intimidating for the first time to
first
do that.
Time.
That was, you know, I was in the States.
How long have you been in the movement?
When was that?
The cash.
I don't think I was initiated.
You're still a Bhakta.
Yeah. Yeah. I didn't think about that. Yeah.
Yeah. It wasn't an easy thing, actually, to massage Prabhupada. Prabhupada liked a very strong massage and a really good workout.
I was pretty strong at that time. Believe it or not. And I was very, I had a very hard time. He wanted harder and harder and harder.
Yeah.
Remember?
Well, there's no limit. Right?
You got a few stories on this one. Go on, you go.
How much time do we have?
How long do we go for?
You see, so many. The first time I was in Prabhupada's room, see, that's when I had my sweaty palms. That was basically, I think, the first time when you had that the real darshan of Srila Prabhupada, like in his room. Mine was in New Dwarka, and it was a white tile floor. I remember that I really felt like I went into the spiritual world when I walked into Prabhupada's room. It was just his white tile floors and blue walls and saffron curtains. That was the formula. You know, they heard
gold trimmings.
Yeah, with gold trim on the curtains. They had heard Prabhupada like blue.
So that when Prabhupada liked something, that was it. You know, we painted everything blue, blue, blue. Every temple wall was blue. Every Prabhupada's quarters were blue with gold trim. And so Prabhupada had, he learned to be very careful what he said he liked, because he would get like deluged with this light. But that's when I had my sweaty palms, and I was with Kirtanananda, and he said, oh, he brought me in. This was before, this was 6 months before I became Prabhupada's servant. And he brought myself and Kuladri into the room. We were like Kirtanananda's right and left hands in New Vrindavan. So we went to New Dwarka. I received Brahman initiation at the time. But he brought us up into the room for a private darshan. So we went and offered obeisances, and Prabhupada said, there are two brahmacharis from New Vrindavan. Prabhupada said, very nice. And he looked right at me. He said, what is your name? Nothing at all came out of my mouth. I just sat there like this, and I felt my hands were like glued to the floor. They were so wet, and I was just looking, and I was speechless. And I heard Kirtanananda say, Shruta Kirti, Prabhupada, like that. And I just said, yes, Prabhupada. But, and massaging, I was so afraid to massage Prabhupada. I got to watch Sudama Maharaj give him massage the first day. And I was watching, so, like, trying to absorb everything. Wasn't writing anything, but I'm watching, and I thought, well, I'll do this for a few days. I'll just watch him. And Sudama gave Prabhupada the massage, and then he offered obeisances and said, okay, Prabhupada, I have to go. And he was leaving, and I just became petrified that I would have to massage him. But Prabhupada liked such a strong massage. And Prabhupada was, how much did Prabhupada weigh, do you know? Have an idea?
Probably about 60 kilos.
Yeah, not a lot. And he was 5 foot.
5 foot four.
5 foot four. So he wasn't big, heavy person, but he would sit on that mat, and you would get behind him, and he would say, you massage my back as hard as you like. And then he would test you, you know. Yeah. And I remember, I was 21, 22, and I was also strong at the time. I ate lots of prasadam. Prabhupada insisted. He said, whenever he saw me start to lose weight, he would say, what's wrong with you? And I'd say, nothing, Prabhupada. I'm trying to cut down. And he would look at me like I was crazy. And he would say, you have service to do. You have to massage me every day. He said, eat as much prasadam as you can. He said, whatever you can digest, you should eat. He said, why are you cutting down? And I think that's because that's what you say every day in your lectures, right? So anyway, I was behind. Sometimes I would get behind him and I would massage. And there were two reasons. One was because he said, massage me as hard as you can. So I would think, okay, I'm going to massage him so hard that he's going to say, okay, that's the limit. And the other reason was, you always massage Prabhupada each spot until he told you to stop. And sometimes he would conduct other business. So he would be going over the mail with the secretary. He would be doing transliteration work with his books with the Sanskrit editor. And until he went, you didn't move. So when you were massaging his back in particular, it could become 1 hour just in that one spot, just rubbing as hard as you could, as hard as you could. So I thought, if I do it harder, he'll notice I'm behind him massaging, and he'll tell me to move, because I would start getting tired. But anyway, I tried, and everyone, Hari Sari, will verify this. It doesn't matter how hard you massaged him, he would just sit there completely relaxed, and you couldn't move him at all. He didn't, like, press against you. He would just sit there. Sometimes he'd just have his head down, and he would have his gold Tulsi necklace around his ears. He would put it around and would hang. And he would just sit there, and you're rubbing. And the straw mat nothing moved. You couldn't move his body. Just like if I could push you, you know. But you could push and push. And he was immovable. Prabhupada was literally immovable. He was heavy. He was a guru. So you could massage so hard. But it had no effect. You could literally massage Prabhupada as hard as you could. And he loved it. The harder you did it, the more Prabhupada liked that massage. So, but you couldn't move him at all. Even though he was just some 60 kilos, you would think you could push him.
But actually, there's stories of Prabhupada's lightness also. Sometimes he would be as light. Sometimes Prabhupada would be very, very light. I remember a story of one devotee carrying the palanquin, I think, in Bombay. And he was waiting for Prabhupada to get in. He wasn't looking. The Prabhupada was already in, waiting for them to move. And he said it was just as light as anything. And there are other stories of Prabhupada getting the palanquin, they could hardly carry it.
Mm-hmm.
Strong men. So maybe he had some siddhi like
that. Oh, no. There was a couple of occasions, because when I first joined the party, I was in Delhi, and Prabhupada had come up to Delhi from here in Bombay. This was on November 25th of 75. And he had actually, when he was in here in Bombay, there had been two former servants, Nanda Kumar and Navayogendra. And Prabhupada had just come back from East Africa, and there were problems there. So he sent his secretary, Brahmananda, and he gave sannyas to Nanda Kumar and Navayogendra and sent the two of them with Brahmananda back to Africa. Then he came up to Delhi and he only had Harikesh with him. And Harikesh was the cook and he was transcribing and doing a little personal service, but he wasn't a masseur. So Prabhupada didn't have somebody to massage him. Hansa Duda flew in as the secretary from Germany for that month. But there was a problem with who was going to do the massages. In Vrindavan, there was Upendra and Nitai. So they both came to see Prabhupada when he arrived in Delhi. And even though those two also had formerly been Prabhupada's personal servants, neither of those were available. Nitai had a visa problem, so he had to leave the same day to come here to Bombay where he was registered. And Upendra had just received a ticket to go to Fiji to begin some preaching work there. So he was only going to be in Delhi for 2 days. So then after that, then somebody else was required to do the massage. So I just happened to be in Delhi for that day when Prabhupada arrived. And I was supposed to go back the same day, back to Vrindavan. I'd just gone there on some personal business. But fortunately, Gopal Krishna Maharaj, who was a adhikari at that time, he saw me there, and he said, "Oh, Hari Sori, why don't you stand guard at Prabhupada's door?" Because in those days, we were at Bengali markets, and we had a very tiny little building for a temple. And then further down at number 19 on Todamal Lane. And then Prabhupada was staying in a small apartment at number 9. So he thought it was a good idea that somebody should sit and stand guard at Prabhupada's door. I thought it was very kind of not important. But I was in ecstasy to do it because it gave me a chance. I thought, well, I'll sit there. And I'm bound to see Srila Prabhupada at some point or another. I'll be sitting at his door. So this is great. So I was very happy. I'll go and sit there at the door. So in the afternoon, Upendra gave Prabhupada the massage the first day. Then in the afternoon, Prabhupada had a darshan. So I'd gone in there, and then I was giving sweets out at the door. So Prabhupada had seen me there. So then the next morning, I was in in the temple, just chanting my rounds in front of Radha Paratasarati, and it was about midday. And then the door opened and Harikesh walked in. And he used to have these really thick glasses. So he stood there at the doorway and he gave me a very intense stare. And he said, "Do you know how to do massage?" So I said, "No, I've never done it in my whole life." So he said, "Upendra's massaging Prabhupada, but he's leaving tomorrow, and Prabhupada needs somebody to massage him." So he said, "He's up on the roof right now doing the massage. You have to go up there and see how he's doing it, because you're going to have to do it tomorrow when he leaves." So, I mean, naturally, I was flabbergasted. I was actually amazed. I couldn't believe it was happening. But I wasn't going to hang around and, you know, debate the point. I ran out the door and I ran down the road as fast as I could, and I actually couldn't believe it was happening. And I ran up the stairs. You had to go up three flights of stairs. And it wasn't until I got up on the roof that I started to realize this was reality. Because I got on the roof and I half expected that Prabhupada wasn't going to be there. But somehow or another, but when I got there, there was Srila Prabhupada sitting on the mat, and Upendra was massaging him. So I offered my obeisances, and then I sat there and watched. And then after a few minutes, Prabhupada opened his eyes. His eyes were closed. He opened his eyes and he looked at me, said, "Yes." And the way he said it, I thought, ooh, you know, did I make a mistake, or am I supposed to be here or not? And then I said, well, Hari Kesh said that you need somebody to massage you tomorrow, and Upendra's leaving, so he said I should come up and see how he does the massage. So then Prabhupada said, oh, okay. And he closed his eyes again, and that was it for the rest of the massage. So I just sat there and I watched Upendra. Upendra didn't say anything. Prabhupada didn't say anything. I was just watching. And then at the end of it, Prabhupada got up and he went downstairs to take his bath. So then Upendra took literally 2 minutes to tell me how to do the massage. And actually he told me that, you know, there's a certain time limit for each limb, right? And when he added it all up, it came to about an hour and a half. So he he told me what oils to use, sandalwood oil for the head and mustard oil for the rest of his body. And then he told me the order to do it in. Start with the head, then move around, sit behind, do his back, come to the side, do his chest and belly, then do his right arm. Don't forget to pop his finger joints. I was very nervous about that one. I was thinking I might dislocate Prabhupada's fingers. And then move around the other side, do the left arm and left hand. And then Prabhupada would stick his legs out, or he would stick one leg out. And then he would sit, and then you massage the left leg, and then he would stick the right one out, you massage that one, and then finish with his feet. So he told me all this in 2 minutes, and that was it. Then I was sent away and told to come back at 9 o'clock in the night, because there was an evening massage. And at that point, I actually didn't even know that Prabhupada took an evening massage. I knew about the noonday one because I'd seen Shrutakirti in Australia massaging Prabhupada in the sunshine in the backyard. But I didn't know about, you know, the evening one because I'd never been in Prabhupada's rooms, you know, except for darshans. So I went back at 9 o'clock. And then at about 9:30 or so, Prabhupada got up and he said, okay, let's go. And he went into the bedroom and Upendra followed him and he said, come on. So I went in. And at that time, he only had one of those chapois, you know, those little bamboo thing, wooden beds with the string and everything. So it wasn't big enough to sit on it for the servant, so we had to stand. And he put the lights out, and then Upendra started massaging Prabhupada's legs. And he explained that he said, now, if Prabhupada goes to sleep, don't stop. You have to keep on going. He said, the first time I did this evening massage, Prabhupada started to snore. He fell asleep and he was just snoring. So I thought, oh, Prabhupada's asleep, I'll stop now. So he said, I started walking out of the room. And just as I got to the door, Prabhupada's voice came out of the darkness. Oh, you were finished? So he said, then I had to go back and keep on going. He said, so you can't go until Prabhupada tells you. And he might not say anything, but he might just, you know, give a little hum or something. So after 10 minutes, anyway, then Prabhupada, he said, And that was it. Then we could go. So that was my training. Then the next day, I came in at about 11:15 in the morning, and sure enough, there was Upendra with his suitcases, and Prabhupada was just giving him a garland, and he was off. He disappeared out the door, got his taxi to the airport, and then Prabhupada turned to me, he said, so, let's go. So we went up on the roof, and that was it. That was the first day. And naturally, I was as nervous as anything. And, I mean, frankly, up until that point, I'd never touched Prabhupada's body. We'd seen him, you know, on morning walks, and we'd seen him on the Vyasasan. And I think one time in the nearly four years that I've been a devotee, I touched Prabhupada's feet once when he arrived at the airport, and I'd seen Madhavisa Swami do it, so I thought, I'll do it too. I gave him a garland and touched his feet, so that was as close as I got. And I remember in about October of 75, after Prabhupada had visited Vrindavan for the Janmashtami and Radhashtami festival, then he left to go on his African tour. And I was the temple commander, and Nittai had remained in Vrindavan. He'd been on the party, but then he remained in Vrindavan to help with the Gurukul. So I remember talking to him one morning, and I was just saying, it's just like unbelievable how you could massage Prabhupada every day. I said, I can't imagine it. I said, I'm so gross. You know, I can't imagine touching Prabhupada's body. You know, I'd probably break his arm or something like that, you know. Because I was kind of a fairly fit and I was also strong at that time. Maybe a little bit too strong on some occasions. But I wasn't noted for being a very refined personality, let's put it that way. So I said, you know, I'm just so gross, I couldn't imagine touching Prabhupada's body, what to speak about massaging him. And Nittai just laughed and he said, you would if you got the chance. And then I laughed, I said, well, I'm never going to get the chance, am I? And then 2 months later, there I am in Delhi and now I'm on. So we went on the roof. And despite being nervous, I kind of realized, well, Prabhupada needs this mass, you know, he needs this service, and I've got to do this, you know, for Prabhupada's satisfaction. And I don't want to blow this. This is my chance, you know. So I just try to concentrate on what Prabhupada needed, you know, as far as a massage. I try to imagine what it would be like to receive a massage. And then I just acted accordingly. So it was all guesswork. I hadn't got a clue what I was doing. But I just thought, well, if I just rub and, you know, kind of move the muscles and move my fingers around a bit like this, and then see what happens. So something unexpected actually happened. I didn't get wet hands. I was very grateful for that. But I didn't even think about that one. But what happened was after about 2 minutes massaging Prabhupada's head. And that was always a little difficult, doing the Prabhupada's head, because he would sit there, and then you would have to do it quite strongly. And I was always afraid of, like, knocking his head over to the side or pushing him back too hard. So I would keep one hand behind to steady his head, and I would, you know, massage with the other and then switch around. And because it was using sandalwood oil, so I was also deathly afraid that, you know, if I used too much oil, it would dribble down and maybe go in his eyes. You know, and sandalwood oil burns like anything. And then I was, you know, I had visions of, you know, what would happen if my thumbs slip, you know, if I'm doing his temples and then my fingers slip and poke him in the eye. And I mean, there's all kinds of things going through my brain at the time. So I was just really trying to concentrate. But an unexpected thing happened, and that was that all of a sudden, all of the joints in both hands started to seize up. Because I'd never massaged before. And so I'm massaging like this, and then all the joints in my hands just started seizing up. And I started to think, it actually got to the point where I thought I wasn't going to be able to continue. And I thought, no, I can't. You know, I've got to do this massage. I really want to massage Prabhupada. I can't, you know, be stopped just on something like this. So I just started praying to Krishna, please, just let me do this massage. Let me, you know, do this massage. And within about 30 seconds or a minute, all the joints in my hands suddenly became loose again and stopped hurting. And then I was able to do the whole massage without any problem. And I never had that problem again. It was just that first couple of minutes, and that was it. So I was really grateful. Somehow or another, Krishna let me do it. So anyway, I tried my best. And Prabhupada didn't say anything. And then he went downstairs. Actually, I blew it because I forgot to heat up a bucket of water. And he had to wait. But he excused me because it was my first day. So he went downstairs. And then later on, I heard from Hari Kesh that Prabhupada said that, oh, he gave me a good massage. So I was very happy with that. So anyway, so that, you know, midday massage, that was a real workout. You're really an hour and a half every day, solid. And there were a couple of occasions when I wasn't able to do it. And just as an example, you know, comparison, Yadabara was saying that he only had that one chance. And he got wet hands, so that was it. So there was one time we were in Calcutta, and Tamal Krishna Maharaj was Prabhupada's secretary. So Prabhupada was negotiating to buy an apartment in Calcutta. And we'd gone one day and we visited this building. It was just under construction. We'd looked through it and then we went to the temple. Then the next day, one of Prabhupada's old friends, might have been Dinanath or somebody, one of his old childhood friends, he came over at Prabhupada's invitation. And Prabhupada wanted him to go and look at this apartment and see what he thought about it. So normally those things, then he would send the secretary. It was always the secretary's business, right? Going here and there and making arrangements for travel and all these things. But for some reason or another, Prabhupada said, now you go with Dinanath and check this apartment. And then I said, well, it was coming up to massage time. So I said, well, but Prabhupada, what about your massage? So he said, oh, Tamal can do the massage. So it was unusual. He sent me as the servant with this man to see this apartment, and the secretary, he had him massage him. So anyway, we went off. I came back. And when I came back, Tamal was still massaging Prabhupada. He was in there's a small bathroom there, and Prabhupada used to like to sit in the sunlight. So he's sitting on the mat. And I came back, and it was very near the end. And he'd massaged his whole body, except for one leg. So he'd just done the left leg, and he was just about to do the right leg. And then Prabhupada said, all right, he said, now you stop. He said, let Hari Sori finish. So I had to get changed into my gumsha. Tamal stopped, and I massaged Prabhupada's leg. One leg, and then that was it, finished. And Prabhupada was laughing, and Tamal was laughing. And then at the end of it, then Prabhupada told Tamal Krishna, he said, actually, he said, that wasn't a massage. He said, that was a love pat. That was why he had me finish him off, because I could give a good strong massage. Tamal was just rubbing oil, but he was... He's not a strong person, you know. He's just rubbing the oil on. So that was one occasion. And then another occasion, we were in Hyderabad for the opening of the temple, I think. That was in August of 76. And I got sick. I got up in the morning. I was feeling a little off. And I decided not to go on the morning walk. I thought, I'll just rest. And then I'll be okay, you know, at least for the massage. And Hari Kesh asked me, he said, why are you not going on the massage? So I said, well, I'm just feeling a little bit, you know, little bit of weakness, but I'll be okay. So he shook his head. He said, you're finished. And he went off on the morning walk. So anyway, then later on in the morning, it was time for the massage. And I was starting to feel quite weak. But I thought, still, I'll be able to do it. So I went into Prabhupada's room. And I got the oils out, and I started massaging. I did his head, and I just managed to get through about 15 minutes on the head. And then I went round, and I sat behind him. And by that time, I was so wiped out. I was so finished. I managed to get my hands onto his shoulders, and I couldn't move. I just hung there. And I couldn't move my hands, I couldn't speak, I couldn't do anything. And my hands were on Prabhupada's shoulders, and then after about, you know, 10 or 15 seconds, he realized nothing's happening. So he turned around, he said, "You're sick?" So I nodded. I couldn't even speak. And I just nodded, and then Prabhupada said, "All right," said, "go up, you go and take rest and send somebody else in to finish the massage." So I had just enough strength to stand up. I walked out the door. I went into the servant's room. Harikesh was there. He was the secretary at that time. He was typing. He looked up and he said, "Oh, you finished already?" And then I collapsed. I couldn't say anything. I just collapsed in a heap on the floor. I was thinking, yes, I'm finished. Boom. So Harikesh jumped up in alarm. Not because I'd fallen on the floor, but he was thinking maybe something's happened to Srila Prabhupada. So he jumped over the top of me and ran into Prabhupada's room to see what was going on. And then when he came back after 5 minutes, he said, "Okay, I know what's going on." So he got changed, and he went to start to try to massage Srila Prabhupada. Because Harikesh was big. You know, he used to be a football player, American football. He's over 6 foot, and he's quite big. He got there, and he started massaging Prabhupada, and he said for the first 10 minutes, he was doing okay. And he was massaging away, but then somehow or another, he just lost all his strength. So after about 15 minutes, Prabhupada told him, he said, "What are you doing here?" He said, "You're not massaging me." So he said, "Go and get Pradyumna." So then he called in Pradyumna. So the two of them were massaging Prabhupada together. Because Pradyumna was a very skinny guy. It's not like he was not strong. So the two of them were massaging Prabhupada, and then they finally finished between them. And Prabhupada was laughing. He said, "You're both like a couple of women." I recovered the next day and I was able to do it again. But anyway, it wasn't easy to massage Prabhupada. And I know some other people, I think Subhag Maharaj, he was asked one time in London to try to massage Prabhupada. And he was doing it, and then Prabhupada stopped him. He said, "No, you don't know how to do this." So it took, you know, quite a bit of physical exertion to do it. Prabhupada really liked, very strong. Is that it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
So, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.
Yada bhai, yada yada man, yada yada.